sign at the entrance of our meditation room, which came from London. Mrs. Tweedy had it written, which was, "The management does not take any responsibility for loss of the self." It means we can't get sued, you know, because in America you have to get careful. You can get sued for anything. But if we have warning, management does not take any responsibility for loss of the self. We didn't put that on the brochure, I'm afraid. You know. Love is very, very destructive because it frees you from yourself. That's why the Sufis call love the sweetest poison. It gets everywhere. This yellow powder gets everywhere. It gets under your skin, it gets in your clothes, it gets in your hair. You can't get rid of it. Mm-hmm. There is a Persian poem, keep away from the lane of love. Keep away.
I had a dream. I was sitting in my apartment, which is up on a second floor, and the front door blew open a little bit, and I went over to close it, and then I went to sit down, and then it happened a couple of more times, and the door would blow open, and I'd close it, and I couldn't understand why it didn't stay shut.
Oh.
And so... So I went over to the door.
Get some nails. You know, nail it shut.
I went to the door and I noticed that the door jamb was missing around it. And then I opened and I looked outside and the stairs were gone. And underneath the building, instead of there being another unit below mine, there was almost no structure holding it up, almost nothing underneath.
Oh dear.
And I thought I should call somebody. So I looked for my address list and I couldn't find the phone number of anybody. And then in the next scene, I was sitting in a small car like a college student with everything that I owned inside the car, ready to drive off. But the windshield was completely shattered, and I couldn't see anything.
Uh-huh. One of those really encouraging spiritual dreams. I mean, you've got the lot, haven't you? You know? You can't keep the door closed. There's no structure to your house anymore. You've lost all your phone numbers. And you can't get away in your car and you can't see anything. I mean, this is, you know, people have done penance for years to get a dream like that. So what would you like to do, my dear? I mean, you can either say, you know, that's a kind of little bit worrying dream. You know, it's only a dream. I mean, you wake up and, you know, life is still there. And, you know, or you can take it seriously. You can say, hey, something in me is trying to tell me something, that my life could change quite drastically, that everything that I hold precious could go. That even the very structure of my life could be taken away. That I would have no idea where I am going. No. We are given choices. There is a kind of misunderstanding that if you get a dream, it's going to be like that. I used to think that, but then I worked enough with people to realize that we have this ability to push away our spiritual destiny as fast and as far as we can. And that if you get a dream like that, it is also a choice. We have to say yes to our own dream. We have to say yes to that. that is pushing open the door. And we can turn away from it and we can look at another reality that is much more tangible and will grip us very easily.
The dream happened to me the night that my youngest son was married, the night after, and just a couple of hours before the wedding, my father had gone to the emergency room of the hospital. And I had always thought of the dream as a reflection of those two people I held so dear, how vulnerable it was. But as you're speaking,
no.
I can see there's more.
You see, some people think spiritual life has to do with finding security and finding a sense of belonging and finding a sense of inner purpose. And, you know, I'm sure you've read the flyers. You know, Sufis have never tried to soft sell anything. There is a wonderful Sufi saying, which we can all meditate on from time to time, which is, only that which cannot be lost in a shipwreck is yours. And in a shipwreck, you can lose everything, even your life. Because Sufis deal in reality with capital R. And sadly, the only way to cross from reality with a small r to reality with a big R is to lose everything you think precious. I personally think it's wonderful to lose everything you think precious because, you know, it's all kind of a burden anyway. But it can be a bit scary at the beginning. I remember somebody soon after they came to our group, they had a dream in which, you know, they had a nice car and they went to park their car to go somewhere, and when they came back, that car had been totaled. I mean, not just a little bit, completely totaled. And that was, from a Sufi point of view, a wonderfully auspicious dream. So that's what I mean when it depends what you want to do with the dream, because it is your dream. It is your door that is blowing open. It is your house that has no structure underneath. And it depends if you are prepared to live that part of yourself. Or if not, wait till later in your life when maybe you've got bored. Or you see, there are times, why do I say that? Because one thing I have noticed over the years working with dreams, working with people, is there are times in people's lives. I think of it like the tide, when the tide comes. No, like 100 years ago in the time of sailing boats, when a ship had to set sail, they had to wait for the high tide. And sometimes they had to sail at 4 a.m. because that was the high tide that could take them, particularly from London down the Thames and out. They were going to America or somewhere. They had to wait for the tide. And there are tides in the cycle of our lives. There are times when the inner and the outer come closer together. And we can catch the thread of our deeper destiny and be able to live it. And at those times, when the tides are right, then we have dreams. Then the inner world says, come on, hurry up, now we can catch the tide, the moment is now. Hurry, for time is precious. And if you wait and put it on the back burner, maybe a couple of years later, somehow life will have swallowed you up again. And it'll be more difficult to enter the empty space where the real relationship to God takes place. So think about it. Think what you want to do, because we are free. We are infinitely free. Think if this great adventure is something you feel like doing, if you feel like venturing into the unknown. It's like Hazrat Inayat Khan says, We are like an archer. We have the bow and the arrow in our hands, but we can't see the target. You don't know what it's all about. You can't know at the beginning what it's about. Your dreams can hint to you. They can send you postcards from the edge. But you can't know. It's too wonderful, it's too terrible, it's too absurd, it's too ridiculous. It's too tremendous. That's why Sufis have to be a little bit crazy. Mystics always have a screw loose. If you were sane, you would never do this. You get a bit drunk, you get a bit crazy, you get a bit intoxicated, a bit lost in love, and then the adventure can begin. Yeah, somebody else. Elisa, yeah.
I had this dream the night before the conference began.
Oh, that's nice.
A man was locking me in this room that was completely empty.
A man was what?
Locking me in a room that
locking
was...
Locking you in an empty room.
He wasn't only locking it, he was bricking the door up.
Great. No way to get out.
And two sides of the room had big windows with this tremendous light coming in. It was totally empty. And I was going to be there for 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the 2.5 years, not only would I have been dead from hunger,
yeah,
all the flesh would have disintegrated from my bones, and my bones would have disintegrated into dust. And when I woke up, I was thinking madly of all the possible ways to get out.
To get out.
When my mind came back, I was like...
Oh, what a shame. So what's it like out? Is it fresh air outside, nice people, ice cream, cake, spiritual talks?
No. The only three ways my devious mind could think of were I could scratch my way through the wall, but I'd be in the hall again and he'd catch me.
Oh.
So that wouldn't be good. That would be bad. And the other was to break through an air shaft and I'd land in the basement, so that'd be bad. And then the other possibility was jump out the window into the light.
Ah, that's an idea. Jump out the window into the light. And what would happen then?
Well, I'd get cut up a bit, but I'd be in the light.
You'd be in the light, hey. How are you going to jump out the window?
That way. Out the window. Just break the glass and jump.
And what is the glass?
Something I can't see that might scratch me up.
Do you by any chance have some sort of illusion that spiritual life is about suffering? Is about deprivation?
I suppose I wouldn't call it an illusion, but a firmly held belief.
Oh, I see! Well, often in dreams, glass is illusion. That is one of the symbolisms in dreams of glass. And a window is, of course, something that separates you from one reality and another reality. And illusions are what separate us. So, you know, I mean, you know, can you make that step and sacrifice your suffering?
It's hard to comprehend that it's possible.
It's possible. Well, you have two alternatives. You've got 2.5 years. What's it? 2001? 2003? How does Tony feel about this? How does your husband? Would he rather have you really miserable for 2.5 years or in the light?
That's a pretty easy choice.
Aha!
He'd be much happier if I didn't cry all the time and was unhappy.
Well, choice is yours. Seems we have dreams of choices.
Thank you.
Thank you. And why did you have it when you came here? Before you came here?
The amount of anxiety I felt before coming here was quite tremendous.
Yeah, but this isn't an anxiety dream, is it? Could it be this is what they call window of opportunity?
The windows look just like this in my dream.
Yeah. I mean, could this be that there is a certain light that is being made visible here that allows you to...
Yeah, the light's like this really bright, bright white light.
Bright white light. Yeah. You sound unhappy about it. Somebody else. Here at the front. Somebody at the front. The lady in the front.
I dreamed this the first night of the conference.
Aha.
And you're in it, Llewellyn.
What?
Do you mind?
No, I don't mind
anything. I'm on the Sufi bus.
On the Sufi bus. Hey, I like that. I must tell you before you begin, because thinking of Sufi buses, somebody, the first time they came to this path, they had a dream, and there was this green Sufi bus, and it was full of Sufis, all different Sufis from all over the world, and there was, at the front of the bus, there was this Sufi master with a long beard and a white robe, and this was wonderful. This man had been waiting for such a bus all his life, and he stood in line, and just as he was about to get on, the doors closed. And the Sufi bus went off, and he stood there desolate at the roadside. And the bus was going to this town a few miles away, and he stood so desolate until a voice said, "You have a good pair of boots, you can walk." Sorry.
Maybe this is the same
bus. Sufi bus brought back that memory.
Yeah. Well, I'm on the Sufi bus.
You're on the Sufi bus.
Yes.
You're lucky.
I'm sitting up front next to someone else. There's a ferret-like creature in a small cage at my feet. It's unclear to me if I belong there or if I should even continue attending the lectures or the conference. People are talking about their responses to the various gatherings. Llewellyn is talking, and it seems to me that he is trying to distance himself from his own talks or responsibility for them.
Very wise.
I get the impression that he is trying to get out of the whole business. I am inclined
from where
to...
do you know me so well?
I am inclined to get out of the whole business, too.
Uh-huh.
Neither of us seems to want to have anything to do with the 10 o'clock lecture that has already been given. And then the ferret sinks his teeth into my heel. His teeth are about 3 inches long, and they're like vampire teeth. And they completely anchor into my foot so that I can't move my foot at all. I'm completely bitten and held. I wonder about rabies and what we will do. I wonder if the ferret should be killed to free me, or if it is best to keep it alive and have it removed by a doctor. I'm concerned about this, but not frantic. I accept what is, but I do want it taken care of. Then, later, I am at the home of Llewellyn and his wife. I am their guest. We are in the kitchen. I realize I have a dream to tell Llewellyn, and then, when I start to think of it, I'm struck by how loaded it is with Sufi symbolism and wary of how he might try to twist his interpretation to prove that I'm a Sufi. But I'm still inclined to tell him. I start to speak, and his wife interrupts me and asks how old I am. 50, I say. And then, to be exact, 49. She tells me Llewellyn is 51. And then she asks him, You didn't feel you were a king at 49, did you? As if my age explains my lack of sureness, my commitment, or my evolution. He says no. I'm slightly irritated and judgmental of the whole exchange going on between them. Then someone, maybe me, says, "Did you even feel like a queen?" As if the feminine were a slightly diminished standard or position. He says no again. His wife pours Namitra a glass of wine. They go downstairs to another room. I pour myself a small glass, like a shot glass, noting that it is a blush wine, not one that I usually would drink and I probably won't like. I notice his wife's glass, which she has left behind, has a little rim of paper towel inside the glass, right at the level where the wine meets the glass. And I vaguely understand that she needs to do this in order to drink it, or else she could get sick from it, from whatever happens when it stands out in the air. I feel slightly bold having just helped myself. I go downstairs to where they are, and Llewellyn is saying that he likes the wine, and his wife is agreeing. It's as if they rarely drink, and tonight, for some reason, they took a sip and were reminded how much they liked it. I remember about my dream and the ferret and wonder what it all means. It occurs to me that all this business with the wine is very Sufi-like, and I wake up.
But it seems you've put me out of any line of interpretation, because I'm obviously going to try to influence
twist it,
you.
Right.
Yeah, so what do you think is the ferret?
I don't know about the ferret. Unless it's God sinking his teeth into my foot.
Unless it's what?
God.
And why would God be a ferret for you?
I don't. It's the teeth. It wasn't so much the ferret as the teeth. I don't know what anchored me.
So what would you like to do with this dream?
I'd like to know what I don't know. I'd like to find out something from it.
Why?
Because I think I dreamed it for a reason.
What do you really want then?
I want to know how to proceed.
Why? Don't trust me, you don't trust yourself, you don't trust the wine, and you certainly don't trust the ferret.
Mm-hmm. So that's not such a great place to be. So why not proceed?
Do you dare to allow yourself what you really want?
Rarely.
But this big problem, big, big problem. One thing Mrs. Tweedy always used to say to us is, only the best is good enough. Only the best is good enough for us. You have to want the best. And be prepared to pay the price. You know, this poem of Rumi, I have bought God, I have bought God. The bargain was easy. I gave myself completely and got him completely in return. But why would the beloved want somebody so second-rate and as you? You know? You're 49, apparently neither a king or a queen, or whatever it is you're supposed to be at 49 or 50 or 51. You only have a little bit of wine and a little bit of a glass, and you don't allow yourself much, not much passion, not much joy, not much bliss. Now, how did the dream begin?
On the bus.
On the What type of bus?
It was a regular kind of, not a school bus, but, you know, a regular...
A Sufi bus. Where do Sufi buses go? They go back to the beloved, no? And if you're on the bus, why not just stay on the bus? Look, I tell you a secret. I have no idea what your dream means. That wasn't the secret. There are so many, many, many distractions. And if you try and work on all the possible distractions, you will get even more distracted. You know, you obviously have psychological problems and, you know, self-esteem problems, whatever it is. Does it matter? No. You can work on them. You can spend a lifetime working on them, two lifetimes working on them. Imagine therapist bills for two lifetimes. You can try and work out what the ferret is, what the ferret isn't. But there is a basic aspect of the dream. You are on a Sufi bus, and Sufi buses go to the beloved. And why are you on a Sufi bus? Because maybe that is what you really want. And you can argue about it and have doubts and arguments with yourself about it, and try and psychoanalyze it. It doesn't matter. Somewhere, for some reason, and we very rarely know the reason, you want to be on a Sufi bus. With other Sufis, going back to God. Yeah? Is that true? Of course it's true. Of course it's true. You don't have to believe me. You don't even have to believe yourself. Otherwise, why would you be here?
Well, clearly, I don't believe you or me.
Yeah, quite. So just sit on the bus. And want something for yourself. You see, they say one shouldn't want anything for oneself. Well, first of all, you should never believe what a Sufi tells you. Because it doesn't work like that. Because really, our desire for the beloved is his desire for us. It is a stamp in the soul. Somebody says somewhere, I want you. That is why the journey begins. You know, Rabia, this great Sufi mystic, somebody said to her, if I renounce the world and turn towards God, will he look at me? And Rabia said, no, never. First, the beloved has to look at you. Then, you look at him. Yeah? You want something. You want a Sufi bus. Stay on the Sufi bus. Let it take you where you need to go. And it will take you there, luckily, with all of your hang-ups intact. You just need a sip of wine. That's what the Sufi says. Just one sip of wine and you are lost. And you had a sip of wine, you had a shot of wine. Yeah? Nothing else matters. What?
Something embarrassing makes you blush.
Yes. We are often embarrassed by our longing for God. Yeah?
When I hear the word ferret, maybe you want information.
Aha, ferreting information. Well, you want information? She wants the beloved. But she's not going to believe me. So next dream. Behind here. Here, you have a dream?
Yeah.
Yeah. You really want to tell this dream?
It's a very short one I had last night.
Do you really want
night.
To tell this dream?
Do I want to?
You really want to tell this dream?
Yeah.
Good.
I think so, yeah. Well, I dreamt that there were ants all over the room that were sharing.
Well, I've got ants all over my room, and it's not a dream, so...
Yeah. Well, there's a little sort of colony of ants in a corner of the shower. But in the dream, they were everywhere. They were all over the table, all over the walls. Yeah. And, you know, the people in the room were freaking out. They thought this was disgusting. So we went outside, mm-hmm. and we looked around, and we thought, oh, my God, they're everywhere, look. Mm-hmm. And that was the dream.
And what is ants for you?
I don't know. I've been thinking about that. They seem to follow me around, but I don't know.
They follow you around?
I don't know. They were okay. I didn't mind them. I wasn't concerned or anything. But
so you don't have to worry. Something is everywhere. You don't have to worry. I don't know what. Isn't somebody an inspiration with this dream? Yes, Peter.
Sometimes ants are called sweet ants.
They're called sweet ants. I didn't know that.
They're common ants, sweet ants. They collect sweet things.
They collect sweet things. Yeah, you have a thought? Ancient. Aha. How does that feel? It's always the dreamer that knows. You don't know.
Ants are slaves to the one.
Slaves to the one. Ants are slaves to the one. That's a nice interpretation. You like that?
I like that.
She likes that. Good. Somebody else with a dream. Somebody else want to share a dream? Hillary, you've given up passing it around. That is not the right answer. Okay.
I have four dreams. Is it all right if I share?
Four dreams?
Yeah.
Were they short dreams? Because we kind of have a lot of people and don't have...
Well, three of them with you when I...
Well, let's start with one dream, and if we don't understand one dream, we go on to a second dream.
Okay. I see this woman. There's a huge fountain, and there's rotating balls going up, and this woman is hopping from each ball to ball, and she's balancing very nicely. And at the top, there's a sheer cliff, like a waterfall, and she says to her coworker, last time she got hurt because she didn't dive head first. So she said to herself, you know, I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to just go for it. So she dives down. And then I hear like a quote, and it's something to the effect of, be free as the leaves.
Be free?
Be free as the leaves.
As the leaves?
Yeah. And so I was inspired by this woman. And so I found myself atop on this huge sequoia tree. Mm-hmm. And... I decided to just jump, so I'm free-falling. As I'm free-falling, I'm grabbing branches on the way down. Mm-hmm. And then and I'm thinking, how come I haven't reached the bottom yet? And then I think, you know, don't freak out, just go with the flow. So I finally do end up on the ground, and I'm very happy, and I'm trying to tell other people my astonishing accomplishment, and people don't seem to get it. That's that.
Uh-huh. What does this dream mean for you?
I'm thinking, like, I'm going for it. I don't know. And if I try to tell other people, they're not going to get it. Or, you know, it's just...
But why do you need to tell people?
Because I have a big mouth.
No, I mean seriously. Why do you need to talk about it to others?
Maybe so I don't feel alone, or I don't know.
You don't feel alone. That's a problem. We each have to make this step on our own. Nobody can make it for us. We can't make it with anybody else.
Can I say the second tree?
Yeah.
I open something, and then I'm Then I realized when I look around, I'm in your family. And your daughter's there, and I'm interacting with her, and I'm joking and talking. And then I see you, and you're coming close, you're following me, and I'm trying to avoid you. So then, in another reality, I'm in another situation, I say, I've made it. And then I realize I'm back in your family, or you're there, and I get really self-conscious and embarrassed, and I think to myself how egotistical I am.
How what?
Egotistical I am. And then I'm in my own surroundings. And then I realize you're there, and you've set up shop in my apartment. And you've made yourself like a healthy drink, healthy shake. And I go over to the kitchen, and I finally see that you have your own refrigerator in my kitchen.
Shake. I love that.
And it's nothing that I've seen before. It's very compact and had just enough stuff for what you needed. And there was a living plant coming out of the refrigerator.
A living plant comes out of the top of the healthy shake.
Of the refrigerator, actually. And I think, oh my gosh, how cool this, you know, refrigerator is. And you say, oh, don't bother with it, pay no attention. And then, so you ask me, so you write a lot? And I say, yes, but only dreams. And then you said something about that dream you wrote, because a couple years ago I wrote you a dream. And it was a reference to that dream. And I said, yeah, you remembered that. And then you said, yes, it was a great dream. And then you're pointing to a title on the back of a book. And then I just assumed that you were going to put that dream in your next book.
Sounds all very complicated.
You know? I have one more dream. It was this morning, and I just see your face, and I look into your eyes, and your eyes like light up.
They look like my eyes are what? Sorry, I didn't hear.
They light up. Mm-hmm. They're very bright, and it feels that you're looking straight through me. Mm-hmm. And actually, you had us. I don't know how to explain it, like a face of ecstasy on your face, an expression. And I feel I can't take it anymore because, I don't know, the way you're looking at me is just like you're seeing my naked self or something, and I turn away and then I feel very embarrassed by it. And my thought on that was that I can't really bear to see my true self.
That's not true. It's not true at all. You know, one of the sad things is when we think about spiritual life, we create so many concepts about it. And we create so many problems, and particularly in the West, if we have a good mind and we are well educated and we've read some books, we can make it almost impossible to even begin. Because we should do this and we should do that and we should do the other and, you know? And it's never been about that. You know, it's like Mrs. Tweedy used to tell this lovely story of the fish who wanted to try to find out what water was. I don't know if you know this story. You know, there are these little fish who are very happy in this lake. And, you know, one day there is a storm in the mountains and the river flowing into the lake rises. And then because it rises, a big trout bounces into this lake. And the trout swims around this lake, and it's a very boring lake, and there are these silly little fish in the lake, and he says to these fish, "Oh, you're such a silly little fish, I bet you don't even know what water is." And then he goes off, you know? And the fish think, you know, wise great fish came and said, "We don't know what water is. What is water?" And they got so confused, these poor fish, about what water was, and they founded universities to discover what water was, and they went to workshops to find out what water was, you know? And, you know, the story goes on that they go and meet this, you know, they go on this adventure to meet this wise, old fish at the end of the seventh lake in this cave, and this fish is in deep samadhi when they come, and they wait patiently, and they ask him, when he comes out of samadhi, they say, you know, "Oh, great, wise, old fish, you know, what is water?" And he goes back into samadhi, and they wait patiently, and then... And then he comes out of samadhi, and he says, "Well, water is not the sky, and water is not the clouds, and water is not the grass, and water..." And he goes on and on and on and on about all the things that water is not. And then he goes back into samadhi. And the fish sort of look around each other, rather disappointed. Then one little fish said, "But he said everything that water is not. Maybe where we are is water." And they all get terribly happy, and they go back to this lake, and they live happily ever after. And, you know, because spiritual life is just being oneself. That's all. I'm a great chop wood and carry water kind of person, you know? Before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. I don't even believe in enlightenment, so there's no before and no after. And the only difference between worldly life and spiritual life is spiritual life, you do it for his sake, for the sake of your heart, for the sake of the one you love. That is all. He loves them and they love him. It is so simple. And you make it so complicated in these universities and workshops and spiritual angst, and then, you know, you have all these things. You're not good enough. Not good enough for what? Not good enough for who? Who is there to be good enough for? You know, it's so simple. We turn our attention somewhere. Our heart looks somewhere. That's all. Yeah? And we are always naked. Before that, we are always naked. Because that is our own essential nature. And you know, the beauty of spiritual life is we realize we are loved for ourselves. Just for ourselves. For our own unique, insignificant self. We don't have to be anything else. We don't even have to be spiritual. Yeah. We're just ourselves. Yeah? Good. Somebody else. At the back. Lady at the back.
Actually, I have a question.
I have a question. Good.
I'd like it if you could speak perhaps about the doorway that seems to open sometimes during dreams to the place of the dead. And...
No, not allowed to talk about that. Anything else? I was just checking, that's all.
That doorway seems to open for me often when I dream. Mm-hmm. And it fills me with great joy.
How wonderful.
But I'd like to bring the understanding into conscious reality more frequently.
Uh-huh. Can't help you. Somebody else. Yes, lady behind you.
I wrote mine out. This is a dream I had last night.
Uh-huh.
The place was a particular city named Oakland, California, which I don't live in Oakland. And around Oakland was a desert-like scene. And the time, it was Christmas time. And it was definitely a Christmas time situation. A man drops off a baby at a hospital. I don't work at a hospital, but I'm somehow working at this hospital. I'm not a nurse. I was asked to hold the baby, and it's a big, fat baby boy. And I mean, it's really a big baby.